When the construction of the paper mill in Grand Rapids was well underway, the four Wisconsin directors of the Grand Rapids Water, Power, and Boom Company met in Kokona, Wisconsin, and their purpose was to incorporate a new Minnesota company. The name chosen for the corporation was the Itasca Paper Company. It has a good ring to it. And finally, we can get rid of that awkward phrasing, Grand Rapids Water, Power, and Boom Company Paper Mill, and instead we've got the Itasca Paper Company. Very good. Its purpose, as it was listed in the incorporation paper, was simple. It was a business to manufacture wood pulp and paper. And while it's a Minnesota company, its headquarters would stay in Kokona. As far as the Grand Rapids Water, Power, and Boom Company was concerned, it didn't go out of existence at this point because it held the rights to the water power and to the dam, and so it still existed there. But as I say, no longer was it in the papermaking business. In 1903, after the first year of full production, the members, the four Kokona members of the board of directors, attended the annual meeting in Grand Rapids. And the main items of business there were to elect officers, that was a mere formality, and to evaluate manager Bossard's thinking that there should be an additional pocket grinder added. And after due consideration, it was decided that would be purchased. And the meeting then went on to rehire Bossard as manager with a $400 raise, bringing him to $2,400 per year. And the minutes of the meeting note that a vote of thanks was also extended to the manager for the good results shown. Well, let's get acquainted with Anselm Bossard. He plays a major role in the history of Grand Rapids and is involved in many, many activities. Anselm Bossard made one of the most important decisions of his life when he left his career in railroading to invest in the Grand Rapids project and plunged into the complex routine of managing a paper mill. He undoubtedly expected to face many problems, but he probably did not remotely anticipate the full spectrum of difficulties he was going to encounter. Bossard was born in 1854 in Indiana. His father, Johann Jakob Bossard, a respected Swiss scholar and philosopher, taught languages for a living. Among the seven he had mastered, Greek, Latin, and Hebrew were his favorites. J.J. Bossard adhered firmly to the principle that any classic work of literature should be read only in its original language. He left Basel having obtained a doctorate in philosophy at the age of 23, boy, that's an accomplishment, to pursue a ministerial and teaching career in the United States. He expected, according to a family history, to give his best to a land that needed culture. After some time in Indiana, where Anselm was born, and named after a theologian ancestor, and incidentally, Anselm Bossard never did like that first name of his, but it's after a theologian ancestor, and J.J. Bossard, shortly after that birth, moved to Wisconsin. There he aided in founding a small college where he taught languages. The third oldest of eight children, Anselm was the eldest of four boys. The family survived on a small income from the college. Family discipline was strict and luxuries non-existent. Anselm acquired a conservative approach to life and a certain Calvinistic dourness that never left him. And I'm looking at a picture of him right now, and boy, pursed, grim-looking lips, and he does indeed have that Calvinistic dourness about him, a formidable-looking figure. Anselm's brothers all attended the best of universities in Europe and America. One followed in his father's footsteps, becoming first a minister and then a professor. The other two chose medicine. At one time, two of them attended school in New York City, where they were devoted patrons of the Metropolitan Opera and the New York Symphony Orchestra. Anselm grew to manhood before a family inheritance permitted such advantages. Although his father wanted Anselm to enter the ministry, he pursued his career in telegraphy. After working in railroading in various Wisconsin towns, he finally settled in Kokona. Anselm Bossard was largely self-taught. His interests were far-ranging, but he leaned more towards the practical than the academic, and he tended to his railroad work with determination and vigor. The family member most trusted for a business sense Anselm was entrusted with managing part of that family inheritance. Years later, he invested some of the money in the paper mill in Minnesota. Bossert's career and interests set him apart from the other members of the family. He possessed a quick wit, inclined towards the sardonic, as evinced at moments of stress or conflict by his mumbled, "Lo, I am among fools." I can just kind of picture him doing that as I look at his picture once again here. Many enjoyed his puns and his apt aphorisms, such as one of his favorites, his autumn comment, "These are the melancholy days, the saddest of the year, not cold enough for whiskey or warm enough for beer." In financial matters, both personal and professional, Bossert remained conservative. In the affairs of his own family, however, his wishes did not always prevail. His wife Caroline, rarely as appreciative of her husband's wit and stories as were others, had the edge on the home front. Although Minneapolis had five hotels that Bossert particularly liked and just one that he detested as too flashy, the latter was the usual abode when Carolyn was along. She regularly indulged her mildly expensive tastes. She was frequently mentioned in the social columns of the Grand Rapids newspapers for her entertainments and trips to visit her family. At the mill, by contrast, Bossert could count pennies to his heart's content. He was well known for his short fuse, as he did not always contain his explosive anger. Any wastefulness on the job would raise his ire. Woe to any careless engineer who had not adjusted the boiler furnaces properly. Smoke indicating wasted fuel was quick to attract Bossert's attention. Despite that staunch Calvinistic upbringing, Bossert had a proclivity for strong and colorful language. Even Caroline had no control over his eruptions. The best she could do was warn her children and later the grandchildren to stay away if something triggered his anger. On one trying occasion, Bossert and Luther Lindauer, one of the four owners of the company, were walking through the mill. Bossert, losing his temper over a number of relatively small matters, declared, "Damn it, let's kill this mill and put in a whorehouse." Well, Lindauer, who had known Bossert a long time, quickly quieted him down with an offer to buy him out dollar for dollar on the spot. When Bossert left Kaukauna for Grand Rapids, one of the newspapers there commented that his job as depot agent had been filled with entire satisfaction to the company, and his business relations with the public have always been of most pleasant character. Bossert was well received and soon widely respected both at the mill and in Grand Rapids. His position as manager of the long-sought industry elevated him quite beyond what he had known in Wisconsin. He was soon actively involved as a community leader. When in 1903 a building and loan association organized in response to an acute housing shortage, Bossert was elected its first president. The Itasca County Independent commented, "As a sure guarantee that the society will be under capable, honest, and prudent management, there can be no surer than the fact that Anselm Bossert is president." When the little boom town of Bovee, just east of Grand Rapids, began to cater to the area's iron miners, Bossert took a liking to the place. How about that? Good for Bossert. He liked its lively lifestyle, and he found an outlet in Bovee for his interest in banking as he served on the Bovee Bank's first board of directors and for a time as president. In 1906, Bossert was nominated for the Grand Rapids City Council. After the election, he headed the list of candidates, receiving over 100 more votes than the second-place winner. And who was that? None other than Dan Gunn, the very popular Dan Gunn, who had such a reputation in Grand Rapids for all that he had done, including, indeed, bringing Bossert to town. Nominated again in 1907, Bossert handily retained the seat. In 1908, he was nominated by acclamation and duly elected, and the Herald Review commented, "He has faith in the future development of this town. He's a conservative businessman in the transactions of his private affairs, and the same business principles are applied in behalf of the public. Yet he's progressive and believes in laying a foundation that will endure in years to come." In 1909, Bossert was elected mayor of Grand Rapids, and he served three terms. The Herald Review stated, "All are well pleased with Mr. Bossert's administration of affairs." Following his 6 years of leadership in Grand Rapids, Bossert remained active with the Water and Light Commission, and he supported many other Grand Rapids projects. He developed a deep affection for the town. After retirement, he and his wife moved to Wisconsin, but they stayed only briefly before coming back to Grand Rapids. Bossert was an able and energetic man, and Grand Rapids took note of his contributions. When he died in 1930, the town lowered its flags to half-mast, and business places closed during the hour of his funeral.